The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Historic moment of the closure of nominations is less than 2 hours away. And to discuss not only the runners and riders, but what we face in the month ahead, I'm delighted to welcome for analysis in terms of both the politics of it, the competitiveness of it, but also the constitutionality limitation of it. It's a pleasure to welcome John Lee, Executive Editor of the Irish Daily Mail, Dr. Tom Hickey, Associate Professor of Constitutional Law at the School of Law and Government in DCU, and Sinead Carroll, Editor of the Journal. Let's start with the literally breaking news. I see Padraig Tobin has put out a tweet. 2 hours left for nominations for the presidential election. Two more signatures needed. TDs and senators have not made up your mind. It's simple. Let the people pick the president. When I was discussing this yesterday, there was a presumption from Padraig Tobin that they were on 14. Plus four with Independent Ireland, Marion Harkin, and one other who did, Aubrey McCarthy, would get them. But actually, they weren't on 14. They were on 12. And that leaves it too short. John Lee, would she make it?
It doesn't look like it right now. The logistics, she said herself, Maria Steen, that last night would be very difficult if she didn't have the votes by last night. That's what she said. If something dramatic happens, I do know there were dire warnings being issued to all members of the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party last night that no one was to go offside. So she may have hoped.
Willie O'Dea ruled it out anyway.
He categorically ruled that out to our paper, saying that he would not have considered it. It was reported differently, I think, earlier in the evening. There may have been one or two who have such animosity from Micheál Martin that they might do it. But that animosity would be returned tenfold, they've been told. So I think it would have made it more interesting had we had another candidate.
Also, the other significance is that Jim Gavin has a clear run at Dublin. If Marie Steen, I see Miriam Lord had Royal Ascot meets Ballinrobe races, which I thought was a great line. Are you agreeing with that, Sinead, that she's going to come up just short?
Yeah, like if I'm looking at the countdown clock in front of us, which probably Padder and Maria are doing at this, they have Customs House appointment at 11 a.m. It's now 10:08. They need to get the two signatures, literally two signatures,
there is on a logistical issue
on a piece of paper in the next 52 minutes.
And quite a few have said no. I mean, I understand Michael McDowell, who they were hoping for, said no. Crockwell, Senator Crockwell, has said no. And some, the boxer Moran has said no.
And I saw Micheál Lehane reporting there in the last half an hour that the office of the Ceann Comhairle was contacted, but she had said no, it would compromise her position. Yeah. So if we're down to Ceann Comhairle intervention requests, you're probably really at last hopes.
So let's go on the working assumption there will be three. Just historically, Tom, that is the lowest in 35 years, is it?
Yes, it's 1990, I think. Well, there were three in 1990, isn't that right? Yeah. So, since then, seven on one occasion. On the last occasion, were there five? Something like that,
Like, are you losing the will to live here? Or
I still think it'll be quite interesting. You know, I mean, you have, obviously, you have two, as it were, governments.
It's a lot more sort of traditional party political.
It is.
You've left and then you have some. And just on one feature of how we got to where we got to. So the local authorities ended up, you know, all that brouhaha was for nothing. The one surprise, I think, was Sinn Féin, insofar as that in polls, they're top of the pops. They are, you know, they've 38 TDs. They've, you know, if you throw in their two MEPs and senators, they're a formidable force. Do you think they kind of, like, you know, Frances Black was supposed to be their preferred independent. Catherine Connolly has never really been a Republican in the true sense of it. Do you think they just slept on their hands too long or what?
I've been of the view, and you may disagree with me, that Sinn Féin have been in something of a crisis since before the general election. If you think back a year ago, they had controversies, significant, serious controversies over the allegations against two press officers to do with one person. Some serious allegations which caused the party to go into media lockdown in advance of a general election. They then, let us not forget, lost 20% of their support nationally in that general election, which is a big blow to them.
Well, much more damaging was the local elections.
And then
they got 12% of the vote. And like, that's one of the fears that I would have for them, that what actually happened in June was the Shinner vote stayed at home.
Yeah.
That could happen in the president. They just wouldn't be motivated.
And it may be in the fear in the presidential candidate. But then if you look at it, Ivan, they didn't change their leader. They didn't change their housing spokesperson, their whole political strategy. I'm not saying they did anything wrong, but then to keep your finance spokesperson and all those major figures. Then Mary Lou McDonald said she ruled herself out in March, did it again in April, and then ruled herself back in the summer. So to me, it's been a story of total incoherence from Sinn Féin. I don't think they knew what in the name of God they were doing.
Last minute went for...
Catherine Connolly.
I think they've been making a huge internal decision. We know there was a report that gathered from members' opinions about what they should do for this presidential election. We obviously don't get to know what's on that report. My biggest question to a couple of people in Sinn Féin at the time was, how many times is Mary Lou's name in that report? Because she went from ruling herself out, saying she has a job, to saying everything's on the table. She probably didn't want to run for presidency. She wanted to remain as the leader. And that is the decision that has been made by Sinn Féin now, that she is going to lead them into the next election, bar something happening. I don't think they actually made this decision based on it's a good political move to be standing together on the left.
Have they missed an opportunity? Could they have won this?
If they had ran Mary Lou McDonald, could she have had a chance? Yeah, I think so. When you see the lineup, I think there could be a Mary Lou sized hole. Like, Maria Steen is hoping that the people see the lineup and it's a Maria Steen sized hole. For me, I think there could have been a Mary Lou sized hole, and she may have been able to play that card, that she could have had, you know, use those lines that Sinn Féin want to use. You know, this is a chance to have a conversation about a united Ireland and still remain leader, even if she didn't win. I think there's a slim chance that could have happened for her. Now they have to kind of put out the idea that they've made this decision to put a united front on. It was quite striking on a Monday
Smithfield,
night for Catherine Connolly, and to see all the left together. I'd say that will worry
Fianna Gael
and Fianna Fáil a little bit. Like, that's obviously what they want us to do. But actually, I think they would have liked Maria Steen to be on the ballot paper. I think it would have given a massive lift to Catherine Connolly's campaign, because she can really, like, she is going to try and put herself against Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil, but it would be, I think, very motivating for a certain cohort of the electorate to get out and vote if Maria Steen is on the ballot against Catherine Connolly.
So, Tom, we're going to move from launches of, hello, this is me, and this is who's backing me, to what I'm going to do if I'm president.
Yeah.
And so we're going to hear a lot about opening up the Auras. We're going to hear a lot about community and opportunity and unity. What are the real constraints? Because we see, in terms of Michael D, he has stretched, you know, he certainly had a brand image on social conscience, on foreign affairs, mm-hmm. Middle East, mm-hmm. and so on, speaking out for human rights. And he's dedicated his whole life to that. And he's also had, you know, being a poet himself, he's had a very strong cachet in a very meaningful way about the arts. So what can and can't the president do? Because Gareth Sheridan said he was going to solve the housing problem, get people back from Australia, you know, to be back in Ireland, because he'd get them homes. We look to you to provide honesty, to cut through the promises of what's viable constitutionally.
Well, I think, as people generally know, the political class know, the actual express strict limits in the Constitution are relatively minor. You know, there are 3 or 4 provisions that say, look, in these contexts, the president can't speak without the approval of the government. But that is only actually specifically in the context of making an address to the nation, whatever that means, and making an address to the Houses of the Oireachtas. Otherwise, there aren't any express limits. But of course, if you look at the text of the Constitution, Articles 12 and 13, and you think about it in the context of the constitutional infrastructure overall, you might say, well, look, the president is meant to be somebody who is a kind of a unifying figure in the constitutional democratic state overall. That's the kind of conception of the presidency that is envisaged in the constitution.
They're above the political fray.
Exactly.
They embody the spirit. We live in an era of culture wars where embodying the spirit of whatever can be a very divided...
We certainly do. You know, but you could argue in that context, in that climate, that it's even more important that there would be...
Well, for example... The president is commander in chief. Mm. What does that mean?
Nothing, virtually.
Well, you killed that one, stop. Yeah.
It all might mean something soon. There's been express decisions made by the government to up our armed forces contingent. But
well, the triple lock.
Say we've had a couple of presidents of late who, and even if Mary Robinson had stood again, she probably could have been re-elected. It could be a 14-year term for the person elected now. And look at the populist surge internationally, what we've seen happen in the United States. And much as we may laugh, even at some of Donald Trump's behaviour yesterday, it's extremely, extremely terrifying what's going on in the world with people like Trump in the United States and the way he's pushing their constitution. Who knows what our president will have to face in the next 7 to 14 years? And I think those powers, although limited, may play a role. You know, the president does have the power to refuse to dissolve the Dáil.
Yeah, that is significant. Could just say that we had a very splintered, fragmented result in the next general election. And they, like in Belgium, they met for months and couldn't form a government. It is a pretty pivotal position. They can refuse to, no, you may do a deal or whatever.
And when you see the polling of the electorate really do understand that. When people get asked what is most important to you, people say knowledge of the constitution and political experience. So, you know, the electorate are very discerning when it comes to who they want as their president. I think you mentioned earlier that this is much more party political than it has been in the past. Like if you look back at 2011, when Michael D. Higgins was nominated by Labour, obviously a Labour TD, a Labour person, but Eamon Gilmore at the time said, you know, we stand back now. Labour stand back and out of this. Whereas that is definitely different this time around. It's very, like you see Micheál Martin standing on the shoulder of Jim Gavin, like helping him answer questions. So it's a very different kind of election this time.
It's more hands-on.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely more hands-on.
I think it's quite interesting, Sinead, for Catherine Connolly in particular, because, you know, the people that are backing her, there are significant political movements, obviously, in parties, Sinn Féin, Sóc Dems, People Before Profit, etc. I would have thought they would want the campaign to be kind of like a referendum on the government, pro or anti, and to use it as an opportunity to put pressure on the government in respect of things like housing, etc. But what about Catherine Connolly herself? You know, as a candidate, if she wants to win the presidency, does she perhaps want to avoid that and capture the middle ground, if you like, and pitch herself as a president more in line with the constitutional, what's envisaged in the constitution, in other words, as a unifying figure, that might be to her advantage, but perhaps not in the interest of her backers?
Will geography play a role in this? In other words, that I could imagine in Cavan Monaghan that Heather will do fairly well. I could imagine that Jim will do better, Jim Gavin, in Dublin than he might do elsewhere. I'm wondering how will... And Galway, for Catherine Connolly. I'm wondering about Munster, both in terms of turnout. Like, or does geography just not matter at all in the context of this type of figurehead?
It certainly does if you think most of us live in the Eastern Seaboard, most of them around Dublin. I think it's yet to be quantified, the impact of Jim Gavin's involvement in sport, if we believe everything we hear, but I don't think it's been proven, he'll clean up in Dublin. That's what people would say. But Fianna Fáil are traditionally, and the last few elections have been stronger.
It's really interesting, this, because if you take Sean Kelly and different people over the years, I know in Mayo, John, you remember he ran for Fine Gael.
John O'Mahony,
and so on. Like the network of clubs, junior clubs even, runs deep into the psyche of people's sense of identity.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that in the program we were on together, that there were quite a few, you may have said this, that quite a few people in Fine Gael thought Sean Kelly would have performed very, very well.
I think Sean Kelly would have actually been the smarter vote getter for Fine Gael because of the dearth of Munster candidates and the fact that he has that GA thing to go up against Jim Gavin, so it splits that. But that's obviously with hindsight, knowing that Jim Gavin's there. I think the GA thing, it's a pathway for sure, but it's not a guaranteed pathway. Jimmy Deanahan has talked about this before and named like four or five Kerry men with All-Ireland medals. Obviously, they're not as rare down there, who didn't, you know, who had names on ballot papers. Graham Geraghty ran for Fine Gael in Meath. So it's not a definite path. but it allows you tap into those communities, and going to constituencies is much easier. Jim Gavin, I don't think the Dublin thing matters outside of Dublin for GA people, particularly for those of us in the surrounding counties. But what does matter is that people have seen him do a very serious, very good job with the Football Reviews Committee. Like, you know, we did a podcast a few weeks ago and said, like, if you can fix football, you can do anything. What Jim Gavin has always had a question mark over is whether he is charming enough, whether he has the charisma and
his personality.
His personality. Yeah. And I think those questions are yet to be determined.
The public don't really know him.
They don't know him. And I think the first couple of weeks haven't, he hasn't exploded in a kind of burst of personality onto the stage either.
He's obviously quite inexperienced in terms of this.
And even answering questions on very serious subject matters outside of football. Obviously, football is serious too, but he hasn't.
So let's take some of the things.
Well.
I was reading through some of the things they have. So one is opening up the Auras that they did. I don't know if you told yoga classes there, but you know, reflection or holding events there, and it is a state asset. That's one. Others would be awards that they would recognise. And you know, if the president comes to escort thee, it's kind of a big deal. You know what I mean? So like, energy is a factor. Like, so what do you think they should promise, Tom?
Well, look, I mean, you did mention Ivan that there are actually two powers and functions set out in the Constitution that the President does have discretion in respect of, and they are important. They're not insignificant, right? Refusing to dissolve the Dáil when requested by a Taoiseach who has lost the confidence of a majority of the Dáil, as you say, particularly.
He could ask someone else to form a government.
Particularly in this climate with fragmented, as you say, that's significant, and also referring bills to the Supreme Court, right? But other than that, really, what the Constitution says, Ivan, is very, very little, you know, in the sense.
And just on that, on referring bills, there's a Council of State that advises them, and they have advisors, and they are made up of a lot of government
figures and establishment figures. Exactly,
Can he go against the Council, or she, go against the Council of State?
Well, he or she is obliged to consult with the Council of State. I'm not aware of how the Council of State actually functions, because we don't know much about it. But I would have thought, I mean, former Chief Justices on the Council of State would be very significant, no doubt, in advising the President, right, you know.
So we have 4 minutes left, and I'm going to put you in the... So I hear there are polls coming out at the weekend, and on the basis of three, and I'm told, actually, the more interesting thing of this is that it's actually very tight. There's no, you know, it's there to be won and lost, that there's not much between the three of them. Time will tell. And, you know, everything's in a state of flux. What do you think the dynamics of the campaign will be, John?
Well, I think, and certainly we've talked about the limited field and the party political nature of it. Party machines, as you know, will probably come to the fore in this. I think Catherine Connolly will be disadvantaged for that very reason. And then the transfer pattern between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. I found Heather Humphreys didn't perform well at a press conference after her launch.
You gave her a hard time. Well, Eric went to the unisex toilet, didn't know when he left, and she says it was drum picnic, and they were shuffling around to get answers. Yeah.
But she couldn't give straight answers to straight questions, whatever the subject matter was. She didn't perform then very well. We yet have to see Jim Gavin in that arena. So I think an awful lot will be decided by the debates. I think both candidates are pretty mediocre. Speaking to Fianna Fáil ministers and TDs last night, they're not energised by Jim Gavin. They're very unhappy with his campaign thus far. They feel there isn't that charisma aspect. Some people would feel that, in fact, Heather Humphreys has more of a common touch. So I say it would be between the two of those for a winner, and I couldn't call it yet. Everyone seems to think
Summing up of it is, because, you know, at the ploughing and everyone else, and Ivan, who's going to win, my sense of this is that the zeitgeist of 2024 in the local and general elections was up to 40% transfers mutually between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And my kind of feeling is that if Jim goes out, he'll push Heather over the line, or vice versa. And I don't know which way it'll go. Would that be an unreasonable assumption?
I think, and going back to what I was saying about Maria Steen being on the ballot paper, I think Catherine Connolly has to get the vote out. And I think that'll be a very difficult thing to do, based on what John was saying, that you need a machine on the ground, and whether she has time to get that out. And I do think it'll be a little bit like the dynamics of it. I think they'll try and be as quiet as possible with still being visible because they don't want to say something.
So at this stage,
that's they want to be Michael Dee in 2011. They want to be the last man standing.
The barbed wire on the fence is cutting into you. John said he wouldn't call it. If you had to call, and you can change your mind, but what do you think?
If I had to call it now, probably just because we haven't heard from her and she has a party behind her, Heather Humphreys, but that's because she hasn't had anything making the front pages this
I haven't
week.
Done the maths on it in my head. Maybe Ivan, you probably would be good on this, but if you look at the general election support for the people who are backing each candidate, right, Catherine Connolly probably comes out at maybe 30 to 32, whereas the other two are on, what, 20 to 23 each? So I guess it probably puts the favourite, whoever comes out between the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, but I wouldn't rule out Catherine Connolly.
I think the FFG are more likely to get their true blues out to vote than people who are again politics and again the whole lot, but not arsed to go vote.
Yeah,
okay. True, but it could become a referendum on the government, in which case Catherine Connolly might do well.
Now, this is just the beginning of this with the jingle and the whole lot. My sincere thanks. I enjoyed that discussion. John Lee, executive editor with the Irish Daily Mail. Sinead Carroll, editor with the Journal. And bringing some academic brilliance to it, Dr. Tom Hickey of DCU.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.